Spandau Ballet? Fan? Steve? No?
I'm not,
DJ Mega Party was really enjoying it.
Oh, good. Good for him.
Like waiting in town for a number 17 bus, you wait 10 and a half hours ready to score a league goal at the Medeski Stadium, and then five come along in just over an hour. After a 5-1 thrashing of Ipswich, we'll ask whether it's time to get carried away or if it's still a work in progress for Steve Clarke. All that to come, plus plenty more, including the mailbag and pub chat on the Tirelest End podcast. Hello, my name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetirelestend.com, and our last episode was recorded just after the transfer window slammed shut, but guys, the emergency loan window's open. So what I've done here is drafted in some loanies. I've rested Johnny and Westy this week, and I've brought in a motley crew on short term loan. Starting with Mr. Handbags Harris, Dave. Hello.
Hello.
Also joining us, two other voices you may have heard on this show before, especially in our pub specials. Those turn up when it's the pub.
Yeah.
Steve Kurtz, as known as Raw Hoop. Steve, hello. Yeah. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Hope you're suitably impressed.
I feel so welcome.
Yeah, and Mark Mayo, on the website, another assistant editor. Mark, hello.
Yes, hello, thank you.
Guys, you've come in at exactly the right time for this show. You did sign up before we played the Ipswich game, but we've actually got something awesome to talk about. I said a 5-1 win over Ipswich. Nobody saw this coming, I think it's safe to say. I think even the most optimistic of us didn't see us putting five past Mick McCarthy's side. We'll come on to that in just a minute. But just generally, how optimistic are you about Reading at the moment? Is this, I asked a question on last week's show, is this the best you felt as a Reading fan? And I think me, Johnny and Westy all said, yeah, for quite a while. But how excited are you now?
Pretty excited, yeah, you got to say. The transfer window, the signings on transfer window obviously increased optimism significantly. Certainly, the way that we've been playing up until that point, it was pretty clear that what Steve Clarke wanted to do, but simply couldn't do because he didn't have the personnel. Having seen it in practice on Friday, you can't be anything other than excited, really. So incredibly optimistic.
Mark, time to get carried away.
Yeah, I'm still cautiously optimistic. It's sort of like you've come home from work one day and you've been told you've won the lottery overnight because it was just such a transition out of nowhere. And at the moment, we've still got to see how it pans out. But we're moving in the right direction, which is something we've been slowly doing for the last year or so. And now we're doing it quite rapidly. So, yeah, cautiously optimistic.
Steve, you're our social media guru, the architect of tweets of the week. So you get a good vibe of the fan base. Are you, and have you noticed the rest of the fans really getting carried away?
Yeah, the fan base reflect my mood in that I'm absolutely optimistic and on top of the houses screaming promotion, which is probably might come back and bite me in the end. But I'm at the moment, I think top six is almost necessary given the squad we've got. So,
well, we'll discuss that reason for the optimism, that 5-1 of Ipswich, in our recap.
View from the Tirelest End.
Recapping this week's championship action.
Right, so as mentioned, Reading 5, Ipswich 1. Not just a great Friday night, but a great Friday night on the telly. So it wasn't just us entertained, it was the rest of the country. And it's a bit mean, really, because we've all had to sit through, as I said, 10 and a half hours of goalless football. Suddenly the TV cameras pitch up and the goals fly. And I think it was the same against Bradford as well, didn't it? Scored three there. So if Sky can turn up every week, that'd be very, very helpful. But, gents, I said I don't think many people saw this coming. I think optimism was certainly raised by the transfer deadline day dealings, as you said, Dave, getting the likes of Matej Vidra in, getting the likes of Ola John in, Lucas Piers on, technically signing Michael Hector, I suppose. Suppose he kind of counts. But when the team lineup was announced, only one new signing was included. That was Vidra. He started in a kind of up front alongside Saar. It was a bit of a 4-3-3, a bit of a flowing formation. But Nick Blackman kept his place in the side, which was interesting, really, because only about, 35% of people on our squad selector wanted him to start. But Steve Clarke knows better than 65 of us, clearly, because Blackman started and put in an absolute stormer. By now, you've all seen the goals. Orlando Saar with a hat-trick, Nick Blackman with a stormer as well, and Oliver Norwood with what quite possibly could be goal of the season. Freddie Sears, the man to get on the score sheet for Ipswich. But initially, lads, going back to the start, were you happy with that team selection? Did you think it was our strongest side?
I didn't think it was the strongest side. I was certainly happy to see Vidra. I think it was pretty clear that Vidra was going to start. He's obviously match fit, yada, yada, yada. Before the game, I would have liked to have seen certainly Pierzon starting. I would have liked to have seen Danny Williams, but understandably, he didn't get back from the States until Thursday night, was it?
Yeah, he was too busy sort of scream as he hates Brazil.
Yeah, quite. but having said that, you look at the way the game went and the way that we played. Vidra just completely changed the whole dynamic of that front line, didn't he? Ping, 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 left, you know, left, right, centre. He popped up everywhere. Lovely little touches. Really nice to actually see some pace and movement up there, rather than seeing some people love him, some people loathe him. The big effing Russian, not really doing much.
We're a family friendly show, Mark.
But before the game, yes, I wanted to see a couple of other players, but you know, I was quite happy to start with that team that started.
Steve, how did you see the team line up? How did you think the formation worked?
I thought he wouldn't change the team from Brentford because obviously that was quite a good result, but he did. And really, really weird formation, wasn't it? It was like a 4-4-2, 4-4-3-3 kind of
4-2-3-1 at times.
Yeah, like a real. It was nice to see some fluidity and movement and. I think, yeah, Vidra really helped with that. I don't think if we did play the same team we did at Brentford, we wouldn't have been able to do what we did. And so I think even though he didn't score, he really made a big influence that might not have been so obvious to everyone, but I think it told in the way we played just how important he was. And with the other players that we've got on the bench or not playing or not even in the squad, you think this is going to be a good season?
Mark, Orlando Sarr, 4 goals in 2 games for him now. Yeah. Is this the striker we've been crying out for, or is this just a case of he's got better players around him?
Well, I think it's the latter, really, because you think of the players we've had in the past, like Lafondre, and we've always managed to isolate them, and they are penalty box strikers, so they need players around them. Vidra made things happen, Blackman made things happen, and it was full of attacking intent, that starting 11. And if you have these players bouncing around Sarr, who I think his link-up play around the box has been some of the best we've seen in a long time at Reading. So if you get him in and around those players, then things happen. And things did happen, and we were very, very clinical against Ipswich, which helped as well. So, yeah, I think Sarr's got a long season ahead of him if he's going to keep it up. But it's a really promising start, how him and Vidra and Blackman all combined.
I think what was really promising with Sarr's performance was the type of goals that he scored. Each goal was totally different from the last. So he's shown, you know, just in one game or in the space of 45 minutes, really, that he can score all manner of goals. The header, the cross from Blackman was superb, but the run onto it, if you actually watch the movement, it's only a 3 or 4 yard run, but it's quick enough, it's dynamic enough to get in front of his defender and leave him for dead. And the second goal, an absolute peach. Was it 20 yards? Absolutely. Yeah, sort of nailed the strike right into the corner, in off the post. Couldn't get it much better. The only place that's actually going to beat that keeper, pretty much. And then the third one, quick counter attack, and he's in the right place in the 6 yard box. He's clearly, you know, in one game shown he's an all round striker. He can score all manner of goals. That can only bode well. And he's got to be, you know, he has to be critical to the side if he can do that kind of thing.
Well, you do kind of worry a little bit in that he is the only type of that striker we've got at the club. I mean, people can make the case for Nick Blackman leading the line as a central striker, or Hal Robson Canoe, or, you know, you can maybe say someone like a Dom Samuel or one of the younger players, but it is integral, and that is my one concern and the one reason I'm not getting too carried away, because as much as I think the squad has been very much improved by Steve Clark, I still think up front there's not that battery, like the 4 strikers you had in a couple side of Long, Leiter, Kitts and Doyle. You haven't quite got that. I think you're still one short. But as long as they stay fit, we haven't got too much of a problem. And one of the men who certainly stepped up is Nick Blackman, the man who's been discussed alongside Mr. Robson Canoe, probably more than any other player on this show. I'll hold my hands up. And, you know, Johnny was on this show defending him, putting forward the case for him a few weeks ago. He has been absolutely superb. You voted him the player of the month on the Tarlest End. Fully deserved it. As I said, only 35% of you want him to play on Friday.
Despite being player of the month.
He did, yeah. But play he did. Scored a goal. Set up another couple. Just fantastic. Steve, where has this Nick Blackman been?
I don't know. In a box, in a cupboard, locked up or something? I don't know. Well, he was so good. There was that time when he was on the right wing in the second half, and he done this guy like three times over, and it was like, where has this guy been? And he still has that habit of looking like he's run too far. I think for, was it his assist? He looked like, what's he done? And then suddenly he bursts of pace, and it's like, and he got the assist for Sarr's goal. And, you know, he's got that in him. And Clark said he's doing stuff on the training ground that he's really impressed by, and he's worked at Chelsea and West Brom and everything. So Clark is obviously seeing Nick Blackman do stuff and is giving them the license to do what he wants to do on the pitch. I think maybe in previous times he's been a bit restricted, you know, shoved out on the right and has to track back and everything. But he's being accommodated to show off now. So I guess it's just a change of personnel around him has given him the license to do what he wants, and that's score goals.
Does he have to start every week at the moment, Mark?
You can't drop him for Tuesday because you're bringing in a player. If you're going to drop him, you're going to bring in a player who's off form or on debut. And at the moment, he's on form and he's a confidence player. He's, the training ground thing is more of a mental thing as well as a technical thing, because he's been getting an incredible amount of stick from Reading fans in the time he's been here. Partly reasonably, but you know, when you've got a player who's on form and on confidence, and particularly striking, we say about Sarr, it's a form game, and when they're on form, you can't take them out of the team.
Absolutely not. One man who's, he's floated in and out a bit like Nick Blackman, certainly under Steve Clarke, was Ollie Norwood. And he was probably the unsung hero, I thought, Dave, on Friday night, because as much as Sarr deservedly takes the plaudits for a hat-trick and Blackman as well for his part in the goals, Norwood scored, obviously, well, I think we'll all agree, the goal of the night.
Oh my.
But as well, just pulling the strings to that Reading midfield, how encouraged are you by the growth he's shown at the start of this season?
Greatly so. As you say, he was very much in and out for the second half of last season. He didn't really fit into the way Clark was setting the team up. But, you know, somehow, clearly Clark has recognised the quality that Norwood has in simply being in the right place to make interceptions. And his quality on the ball also is almost as good as any other Reading midfielder that I've seen. Certainly within, you know, within the first month of this season. Mightily impressed.
Is that the best goal we've seen at the Medeski Stadium from a Reading player? Can you think of any other better ones off the top of your head? I'm certainly struggling.
I can think. Got to go back a little way.
That overhead kick by Leto against Crystal Palace 10 years ago now.
Do you know what?
It's a very nice goal.
Very nice. I actually think Kevin Doyle's against Hull that same season was better. Got the second goal when we beat him 3-1. He just picked the ball up from a cross. Just it kind of bounced up, and he had to really stretch for the volley, and it went in.
And loops over the keeper.
Yeah, I think Baz Myhill was their keeper then, Hull's keeper then, and he got a hand to it. He kept Hull in it. We should have absolutely annihilated them that day. But and then a minute later, Glenn Little went through and sent us all absolutely potty.
I think
which
it's
was nice.
I think it's certainly in the top three, and I think you're going to have to hit a damn good effort to beat that for goal of the season. Certainly.
I think of a couple of Sigurdsson efforts.
Yeah, I'm struggling to think of them off the top of my head. I'm someone that struggles to remember goals. I remember who scored them.
Simon
Churchill
hit a couple of absolute stonkers in 2009.
Yeah, one against Sheffield on the last game of the season.
Last day of the season and against Sheffield Wednesday.
Let's not lower the tone of this podcast with praise of Simon Church, okay?
Well, to be fair,
I see he hit the post inside the 6-yard box again on Saturday.
I see he scored for Wales. He was mightily offside. He scored, he'll take that. Sorry, Simon. Just before we move on then, just one little negative from the game was, I thought, the Sears goal. Now, Jonathan Bond pulls off a pretty decent save. You might want to say he needs to get more on it, but pretty smart save. But the defending was pretty poor for me. Paul McShane, who apparently had to pull out the Republic of Ireland squad with an injury. So he was a doubt for this game, and you could tell why. It just looked a little bit off the pace in the first 20 minutes. He gave the ball away with a weak pass and then had a chance to make up for it with a tackle but missed it. Then obviously it's a good save from, I think, Ryan Fraser's shot. And then it comes to Sears at the back post. Jordan Abit is absolutely ball-watching. It's completely switched off. But Dave,
It was poor.
Yeah.
It was poor. It wasn't particularly good. I'm preempting your question, I think, a little bit. But I'm not overly concerned. A, because we scored five, but B, you look at the goals we've conceded, And that was really, you could look at it from a poor defensive perspective, but the feet from Fraser on the edge of the area were, you know, so quick. And yes, they exploited, as I say, poor defending, but they got to give them credit. They actually opened up the defence as a result. And there ain't many teams that have, in fact, I can't think of a team that's actually done that this season to us. Every goal we've conceded, you know, bad luck in the case of the opener at Birmingham. Individual errors. No team. We had the one absolute stonking strike from Vibe at Brentford. No team's actually opened us up.
No.
And on first viewing, and certainly I can understand why people think it's pretty poor defending in some ways, but they did still open us up as a result of us giving the ball away poorly.
Yeah.
I'm not overly concerned.
Well, Jay's asking is one who's concerned. He says, amazing match, but the defence looked a bit dodgy. A few other comments from people on the match. Gary Woodward saying, Vidra adds a whole new dimension to the team, reminiscent of Shane Long using his pace to force opposition errors. Jenna Morris, who writes our rule roundup, she says, Stephen Quinn, an unsung hero. Energy, work rate for 90 minutes, dynamic, put the tackles in and composed in possession.
Quiriesta.
Yeah, and Sam Lomax says, how did Reading improve on that performance? So, anything score to say six. About that? Scores, well, yeah, we can hope.
I think on the Shane Long point, they are quite similar, but Shane Long, as much as he gets in the channels as well as Vidra, he uses physicality a bit more winning the air. As Vidra, interestingly, we say about Saar is one of the only players we have of his type. Vidra is the only player we have at the moment who can get in behind defences on through balls and get into one-on-ones. We didn't score any of those last season, and Vid was the only player this season who can really do that. And that's where he's going to be important. Yeah. So quite similar to Shane Long, really. Both diminutive, nippy strikers who put themselves about.
You get the feeling sometimes he's on a slightly different wavelength to the Reading players, who obviously aren't used to making those shots, because there are a couple of flicks in and around the box expecting the runners that just didn't arrive. Stephen Quinn, Steve?
I think he's going to be like vital to, said earlier, the formation and the switching we're doing. If he's going to play on the left, he's going to have to shuffle in field while Nick Blackman goes bombarding on. It's the whole shuffling round of formation is only really possible because Quinn is so comfortable playing in the middle. And yeah, he is absolutely amazing. He was, you know, he's quicker than I thought he was, and he's just so working tirelessly. I think that helps a bitter as well. But you know, you might not think immediately, oh, he's definitely going to be our number one left winger. But after that performance and after seeing the formations switching around all the time, you think, okay, maybe he is, and maybe he's there for good reason as well.
Yeah, well, Jenna's not the only one to praise Stephen Quinn. Taylor Cornish, who regularly emails in to the show. Thanks for emailing again, Taylor. He just says, just a word on the 5-1 win over Ipswich on Friday. It was Ipswich's heaviest defeat since November 2012. Really puts the quality of our performance into context. Mick McCarthy's team rarely lose by 4 goals, or concede 5 for that matter. Sarah Blackman, obviously immense, but for me, Stephen Quinn was also phenomenal. He was literally everywhere I looked. As a team, I haven't seen us counter-attack like that since the couple days with Kebe, Long, Doyle, etc.
Yeah, just a quick point on the counter-attacking. We ended up in a situation where we had 4-on-3, 5-on-4s about 4 or 5 times, particularly in the first half. A little bit disappointed that we didn't quite manage to get more joy off of that, but you know, as I say, you create those chances, those opportunities, it will come.
Absolutely. Just finishes by saying, I can tell you now, the buzz of scoring 5 at home still hasn't faded. Chuffed, an ecstatic Reading fan, and said, thanks very much for that, Taylor. Just rounding up a couple of other thoughts. Chris Baker, I did ask for reasons to complain about this game. Chris Baker says, didn't score 10, season ticket is in pieces. Fully justify that. You know, you expect them. I think, what do we have? 10? Do we have, I think, 10 shots in the end? So that's 5 we've missed.
About 6 on target. So we've made their keeper make 1 save. Which
is, you know, I hope they were in at training first thing Saturday morning to work on that. So thank you very much. Just finally then, on that point from Sam, how do Reading improve on that performance?
They do it again, and then they do it again after that, and then they just keep doing it, because at the moment it's all about the results at the moment, and we keep pressing, and if we can dispatch 5 one week, then we can get 3 of those the next week, or 4 or 2, or, you know, you keep going on, and it's a long slog, the Championship, but in terms of improvement, you just need to keep persisting and getting the same thing right every time.
Simple answer to that, big derby on Tuesday night. Derby are a better side than Ipswich, much, much better side. They spent £20 million in the summer. We beat them, then it's You know, it does. You know, all right, we've laid down the gauntlet in many ways on Friday night. If you beat Derby, and we've got a bloody good record against them, it's got to be said. Then people will start taking a look and thinking.
Our odds for promotion halved over the weekend. If you have a look at the international bookie watch that went up a couple of days before the Ipswich game, I think your best price was 12-1 on Reading to get promoted. Now you're lucky to get to about 6-7-1. So if you haven't, or I think Johnny said he's got, I think said he had £50 on Reading to win the league for last show. So looking very good for those end of season Tarlest End beers at the moment. So thanks for that, Johnny. So that just about wraps up the Ipswich game. Only other point I'll make before to go. What a bench. What an absolute bench. I mean, there's not really much to talk about in terms of, we did see two other debuts with Piers on and Ola John. I didn't really have much time to make much of an impact, really. Piers on looked like he's got some trickery at his feet, but there's only so much you can take from him.
He'll need some time to adapt to the Championship.
Yeah, 10 minutes in when you've already got the game won is a bit unfair.
He claimed a cheeky assist for Norwood's goal.
A nice simple square pass in the middle of the field.
Still
banked it. Fantasy owners everywhere are rubbing their hands.
3 points on fantasy.
It's going to be really difficult for the likes of Gareth McCleary, Danny Williams, like Chelsea's new centre back, Michael Hector. How are they going to get in the team?
Ferdinand will get injured.
Good point. And there's no better way to finish it than that. We've got a couple of questions on that in the mailbag, so we'll save the bulk for that. But in the meantime, let's just move on to some news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, gents, a few bits and pieces to talk about in the news. We'll start with news of a new contract. So as all the signings deadline day, it's nice to see Reading tie up a good prospect who started and played pretty well. Gateships, which I thought. Aaron Tischbowler, he signs a new 3.5-year contract, obviously very highly thought of midfielder. Spent second half of last season at Hartlepool, helped them pull off the great escape and has forced his way into the team. I wrote when we signed that deal before the Ipswich game that I thought maybe he'd go out on loan, but do you think he's going to do enough to keep his place in the side, or is this just waiting for the likes of Danny Williams to get up to speed?
Not doing himself any harm with his performances, is he? He hasn't looked out of place at all. He kind of chopped and changed a little bit on Friday. Certainly second half, it was noticeable, and Clark confirmed pretty much what I thought in his interview afterwards, that he'd been pushed back to sit just in front of the back four and pretty much stay there just to offer protection. But his performances, as I say, haven't looked out of place. Bristol Rovers in the pre-season friendly, I wrote in the match report that it was noticeable just how comfortable he was on the ball in tight areas in the middle of the park in comparison to his midfield partner that day, Mr. Hope Akpan.
On the bench for Blackburn today.
So far advanced than Hope. It was unreal. You know, he's big, he's strong, comfortable on the ball. He's proven a couple of times this season that he's got one hell of a strike on him. Very unlucky at Birmingham not to get his opening goal. But he's when he's come in, he's not been ever present at all. But when he's come in, he certainly hasn't looked anywhere near out of place. He's at his level at the moment, and potentially, I said it on Friday, potentially looks like it could be another Premier League prospect in the making.
Steve, would you keep him around, or would you be tempted to send him out on loan to guarantee him regular games?
The way he's playing at the moment, I don't think you'd be a bit of a fool to send him out on loan, because you've got players like Fernandez who could come in and play, but they're totally unproven and you can't guarantee that they'll do what Tish is currently doing. So you kind of have to keep him alone. But if it moves on to the point where he's fallen out of the team because Williams, Quinn, Norwood, whatever, have taken his place, and you get to, I don't know, November time and he's not played for a month or so, then maybe you would think about loaning him out because he's not getting game time. But at the moment, I don't see why you would, because he's probably third choice central midfielder behind Williams and Norwood now, isn't he?
Fair enough. Moving on. Steve Clark approval rating. This is something we launched when Clark took the job. And he's achieved his highest rating. Now, this was done before the Ipswich game, so Lord knows what his rating would be if we were holding this today.
Six out of five.
Yeah. It is a rating out of five, and his average was 4.23. Now, that's the highest point he's been at since he took over. His very first rating at the end of January 2015 was 4.13. So just about everyone that voted thought it was at least a four out of five job, heading towards a 5 out of 5. Justified for you, Mark?
Yeah, I think it is just about, because every time you sign a new player, the new player says, Steve Clark's great and he's the reason I'm here. So the fact that he's the enticement and he talks a good game. You imagine if Rodgers or Adkins would have got to this stage and these results, then probably still wouldn't be as high, because Clark's quite likeable. He's quite human in a large sense. So, yeah, well, I think he's just about earning it at the moment.
Dave, one point that I thought when looking at this rating is, again, bearing in mind this was done before the Ipswich game, mm-hmm. do you think maybe it's a case that expectation levels have fallen? I can't think of many other managers that would go, that would have a run that saw them not score a home league goal in over 10 hours and pick up a win since the start of April over, what's that, 6-7 games, and get a near 4 out of 5 rating.
It comes down to the players that he signed as well, though, doesn't it? It's not just what happens on the pitch. Presumably that's what a lot of the marking. People have seen what he's doing. And he's always, from the start, he pretty much said, well, certainly for a couple of months in, he was planning for next season because he didn't have enough quality in the squad. And certainly his interview at Charlton last season, he pretty much said that. And he's gone about things the right way. People can see that he's gone about things sensibly. He's building from the back. He's sorted out the defence, signed Paul McShane. Anton Ferdinand feels like a new signing so far. Then seemed to go on to midfield, and then finally he's sorted out the top line. There's no question. People see that. People aren't idiots generally as a collective, and the results so far and the performances have backed that up. All right, we haven't had fantastic results, certainly at home with 2-0 draws, but we're playing okay. You know, we were playing okay, and it only needed that final round peg in the round hole. And Vidra seemed to provide it, and suddenly we have one dynamic unit that absolutely smashed a playoff contender out of the ground, pretty much. So entirely justified.
Yeah, we'll see how much he rises or falls at the end of this month. But another man in the awards frame, Nick Blackman, as mentioned, took your Player of the Month vote. He won 44% of the vote. Again, this was done before the Ipswich game. So off the back of his two-goal performance at Brentford, he took 44% of the vote. Paul McShane with 26%, Oliver Norwood with 20%, and Danny Williams took 11%. Gents, any problems with that, Steve?
No.
No? Mark?
No, as soon as Brentford happened, it was always going to be Blackman's, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dave, a case to be made for any of those other three over Blackman?
No, not really. No.
No. I think I voted for McShane just for the solidity that it brought, but I can't really argue against Blackman. I think it was a bit of a coin toss. My only justification was that the defence had arguably been performing better than the attackers in most of the games so far this season, but I can't fault him. He's had a brilliant month, his best month at the club by a long way. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, quite.
Yeah. So yeah, congratulations, Nick.
Attackers win your games.
Very much, very true. Not always. Well, yeah, not always. Jake Cooper won a game on his own last week.
away to a Premier League team.
Yeah. So there you go. But no, congratulations to Nick. As I said, you know, he's coming for a lot of stick. I'm still not 100% sold. I still believe that you've got to put it together over a long period of time. But look, I've got absolutely no complaints. He's shown what he can do. Whether he had a point to prove or not, he says he didn't. Mm. Most people said he did. Whatever the case, he's showing it now, and he's silencing a lot of people, so long may that continue. And just a few other notes, obviously it was International Week. Robson Kanu, speaking of men getting a lot of love,
yeah.
How Robson Kanu having his name sung by Wales fans for well over 10 minutes in their game against Israel. Unfortunately, they didn't make it to Euro 2016. They still need a result from one of their final two games,
one of which is against Andorra at home.
Fierce team, those Andorrans.
Robson Kanu might finally come unstuck against the Andorran defence.
Same with Oliver Norwood's Northern Ireland. They also nearly qualified a great late goal against Hungary, getting them a vital point, so they just need one more result. And as we mentioned, Danny Williams scoring an absolute belter for the USA against Brazil.
At 4-0 down in the 90th minute.
That's the Hal Robson Kanu special, that is. he's learned from the best already. So yeah, really good news seeing all the players do well on international duty. I don't really know what's there other than well done.
Quite exactly. Wales is a bit of a fairy story, really, isn't it? All right, it's all around the talents, pretty much, of Gareth Bale and to a degree Aaron Ramsey. But you know, fair play to them. Northern Ireland, they've got theirs is a lot trickier. I think they've still got. I'm trying to think who they got.
Hungary.
They've just played Hungary.
One of them is Finland, and then it is.
It's a lot more trickier. But having said that, Hungary have still got to win both their games. But interestingly, was it Chris Baird that got sent off?
That was the most bizarre sending off ever. He got two yellow cards for one passage of play.
But was it though? Because he's kicked out at the in one particular instant. Referees played advantage, and then he's clearly cynically brought down the man on the ball, and as two bookable offences.
The debate goes to: would he have done the second one if he'd known he got a yellow?
The fact of the matter is, if the referee's playing advantage for him kicking out, then he knows there's clearly something going to be done. So he's got to be on his guard. Absolutely. No complaints on it. The referee got that one absolutely spot on.
Well, we'll save pub chat ref version for another day. In the meantime, it's time to move on to this week's pub chat, which was inspired by a tweet from our very own Will.
The Tarlhurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
So, James, what inspired pub chat this week, as I just mentioned, was a tweet from our very own Will, who was driving the Tarlhurst End Twitter account around the full-time whistle. It's driven by various different people. It's not always me. There are other voices. Basically, if you see something you don't agree with, it's not me. If you see something good, it's by me. I'm just laying that out there now.
And if the score's wrong, then it's Steve.
One time.
So one there
too
you
many
go.
Times.
In all seriousness, we'll put out a tweet saying that was the best performance since the Coppell era. Now, it's obviously easy to get whisked away in the euphoria of a big win, but I thought, now that the dust has settled, we'll try and... We'll ration this one out. Gents, very quickly before we delve into it, just off the top of your head, is that for you the best performance since 2008? Steve, start with you.
It's up there. I mean,
Don't take the Johnny role here. It's a simple yes or no to start with. Then we'll see if we change by the end.
No.
No? Mark?
No.
Dave? Are you going to send this tweet through to the next round?
No.
I'm really torn, but I'm also going to say no, which makes it sound like we're really ganging up on Will here. But let's try and put this forward, because as I said, it's a pub chat. We've all been in pubs and changed our argument by the end of the night, especially after a few beers.
Yeah,
I haven't got the beers here, but we'll do our best to change it. So. Obviously, 2008, you're talking about since the Coppell era. Obviously, we all know about the 05-06 team. I don't think anyone needs to say anything about the performances those boys put in. But since then, there have been a fair few good ones. Now, I think this, you have to judge it on a different criteria. So obviously, it's not the biggest win. We've beaten Peterborough 6-0.
Yep.
Beat Bolton 7-1. And we've also beat Blackpool 5-1. So you can't just say, based on the scoreline alone, it was the best. Most important... No, probably not as well. I think you'd look games at West Ham,
Cardiff in the playoffs.
Cardiff's in the playoffs, yeah. Southampton, big games like that. Even, FA Cup wins at places like Anfield and Goodison Park. Even you could say, games like Wembley in the semi-final. Mm. So, in terms of importance, again, not really up there.
3 points, that's all it is.
3 points. Now that we've knocked it down, though... Let's look at the positives. Some brilliant goals. Blackman's and Norwood's will be certainly up there for goal of the season against one of the best teams in the Championship. I think we can all agree they'll be in and around the top 10, probably the top 6 come the end of the season, with a fairly new team being put together as well. Broke a long goalless streak at the Medeski, so there was a fair bit of pressure on the team going into the game. Again, on the TV as well, some people thrive under the camera, some people don't. So... Does have a lot going for it, but which ones for you, taking all those factors into account, stand up above that performance? Dave, I'll start with you, just to put you on the spot.
Just to put me on the spot. I think there are some that could certainly be considered equal in the back end of 2009-10. But looking at those, a lot of those games were... under very little pressure, wasn't very much expected of us, although having said that, in March and April particularly in April, we were looking at a playoff drive, a very, very late concerted playoff drive. It slightly failed, but well, there's no slight about it. It did fail. So you look at some of those games, you know, Coventry at home, we won the game in the first 30 minutes. Bristol City at home, we won the game in the first 20 minutes. Peterborough at home, we won the game in the first 20 minutes. Preston at home, we won it in the first half, I think we did. Sheffield Wednesday at home, we won it in the first half. You know, so there were some superb results in the early days of McDermott based around the significant talents of Gylfi Sigurdsson. In terms of excitement, in terms of sort of team dynamicism, we can't really look and look past the days. We can't really look at a game in equal terms, really, after Sigurdsson was sold, because the way that we played, totally different, much more attritional style of play. But in terms of, you know, I suppose in some ways you've got to take a look at what the manager wants from a team. So in terms of the best performance, I don't think you can really look much further away than that Southampton game when we beat them 3-1. Mm. Southampton, it was, under Adkins, were a goal in the championship. A side that scored goals in the championship pretty much for fun. And it was pretty, you know, we played very much a counter-attacking style, solid at the back and nick on the break, and that's exactly what we did. And we carried out the game plan out to a team, and in the end deservedly won the game.
Yeah, in a high-pressure environment that basically it was a pretty much a winner-take-all, if not for the championship, then certainly automatic promotion. Steve, any other games stick out for you that deserve a place above that one?
I agree. Southampton and West Ham. I think just that run of games on our promotion season with McDermott. I just think there are a whole run of games there where we just blew teams away, and it was momentum and really good. But I can't think of one game. I can't really pick one out. I mean, admittedly, I haven't seen too many because I've been away and stuff. But yeah, not one game, but again, I don't want to commit and say, yeah, definitely this game was the best since 2008.
Mark, the counter argument to those two wins, West Ham and Southampton, is that, as Dave said, they were set up as counter attacking wins. So, whilst, yeah, we executed the game plan brilliantly and won key games, you couldn't say it was particularly enjoyable or as comfortable and great to watch, because we were under the cosh. I remember that West Ham game, we were very much under the cosh for the first 40 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
And then just really did hit him on the break. Same with Southampton. He was edgy as seat, nerves shredded. Whereas Ipswich, it was fairly comfortable. Even when it was 2-1, you were never really panicky.
Well, the pressure element, obviously the Ipswich game had very little pressure, but I think the key thing about a team performance is the golfing quality. You alluded to it there with the Southampton game, is that the Southampton and the West Ham game, those were two Premier League sides full of Premier League players. Our side had maybe one or two Premier League players and we blitzed them. And on the same point, in a sense, I think probably the best performance since 2008 was that Cardiff away game on the playoff semi-final, because we had Sean Cummings at right midfield and they had Craig Bellamy, who had been playing for Man City the season before. So in terms of expectations and pressure, that was high.
To be fair, he was injured in that second leg.
And we beat them 3-0.
Yeah, and Steve Bywater did us a big favour as well.
Oh, huge! Yeah.
Good old Steve.
He is one of the many gifts that keep on giving to Reading Football Club. I think I worked it out a couple of seasons ago. In the games that he played against us, he averages conceding 3 goals a game.
Excellent. Long may he's not still playing Derby, is he? Can we arrange an emergency loan for ahead of every game? You do that with keeps, it's fine. I mean, a lot of people went straight on to Twitter and obviously pointing out, oh, we beat Bolton 7-1 and Blackpool 5-1 just over a season ago.
Those were two really bad teams, though.
And that's my counter-argument.
Anyone could have beat 5-1.
Bolton, though, to put 7 past Bolton, and it could have been more as well, and it should have been to nil as well.
Should have been. The mitigating circumstances to that one is that they were towards the bottom end of the table. They were a team totally devoid of any confidence. A manager who never really, Bolton fans never really took to him, and Dougie Freeman at the time. And ultimately, you also got to take a look at just how many chances we created. I think we had 8 shots on goal and scored 7 of them. And that was a that was typical of the team at the time, where we wouldn't actually create too many chances at all during a game. It just happened to be in that game.
Yeah.
Everything flew in.
But by the same token, I think you look at our shot count against Ipswich on Friday night, and I can't remember too many chances other than the ones we put in the back of the net. It wasn't like we pounded them and had 15, 20 great chances. Not that you're going to have those in many games, unless you're playing American Samoa or someone like that.
Andorra.
Andorra. We'll say this when Harold's going to stick six in the net. But yeah, they didn't exactly... Yes, they comfortably beat Ipswich and were the dominant side, but they weren't grinding into the ground, shots left, right and centre.
Yeah, we had less possession.
There were a lot of what I like to call potential situations where, you know, a slightly misplaced pass, which would have put a man in. On the counter-attacking side of things, you're not always going to get a shot away, but you're going to very nearly get into a position where you can get that final touch. There wasn't too much flying across the face of goal. But just taking a look at shots on goal doesn't always tell the whole story, in my opinion.
No, very true. Well, talked about it there. Any of you changing your minds? Any of you saying it was the best performance?
I might be.
Ooh.
We'll go with yes, just so Will doesn't feel so ganged up on
there you go. There you go. Well, Mark, sticking to your guns?
No, I'm sticking with Cardiff.
In terms of excitement and team dynamic, yes. In terms of importance and carrying out managerial instructions to the letter, no, I think the better performance was Southampton.
Yeah, and I'm gonna go for no as well. I think the pressure factor, while was there, was nowhere near, as you mentioned, at games like Cardiff, West Ham, Southampton. In terms of just enjoyment, though, almost certainly. Although I will never tire, as we discussed in our argument. Or debate rather about rivalries. I'll never tire of seeing Reading put seven past Bolton. I don't care how bad they were that night. It still hurts, and that was great. That was great. And Matt Mills as well. Come on, guys. Any chance to see Matt Mills be an absolute misery is fantastic. Well, as I said, let us know your thoughts. You can get in touch with us at the Tarlest End on Twitter. It's thetarlestend@gmail.com for your emails, and it's facebook.com/thetarlestend. Plenty of you have got in touch with us in just those fashions, and we'll get to those in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Again, big thanks to everyone who's got in touch with us. We always appreciate it. You don't have to tweet in just before the show. You can do it all week. If you use that hashtag TTE podcast, it makes sorting through them much easier and can make sure you get on the show. I can't promise I catch everyone, but I do my best. So let's start this week with Keith. He says, who do you think will be our top goal scorer at the end of the season and how many? Sweepstake? Hashtag gamble aware. Can't do any gambling without Johnny here. or Westy. But just very quickly, gents, top goal scorer for you?
Vidra. You got to go Vidra. He always scores goals.
Yeah, Mark? I'd agree with that.
Dave?
I wouldn't agree with that. He's only sort of a 15-18 goal a season striker. I think you can't really look that much further than Orlando Saar, who's already got half the number that both our top scorers got last season.
Blackman.
Yeah.
For Blackman in for me. If he keeps this up, he could do it.
Yeah,
we're talking in the league. Blackman's on five in all competitions. So yeah. Blackman currently is a top scorer.
Yeah, I'll stick to Saar as well. So we'll
pivotal to the way we play.
Yeah, we'll consider a sweepstake next week when the seasoned gamblers are back. Indominus Rexstrom. Jacob, thanks for tweeting in again. He says, stunned by the result, in a good way. Been a while since I could say that. Keith puts in an interesting tweet here, and Steve, it's good you're here, because you're the one usually throwing such spanners into the works of the mailbag. Keith wants to know, who has the worst hair in the current Reading team? And there are a few candidates for this. Nick Blackman, up until the other week, was probably one of them. I'm not just picking on him, all right? It was just bad hair. anyone? Do you know who I'd put? He's not in the current Reading team, but Stephen Hunt on Sky on Friday night. Oof. Dishevelled. Dishevelled.
He's always been a bit dishevelled, though, hasn't he?
Yes. but we love him. Yeah. Mark, any candidates for you? The worst hair stakes?
It'd feel a bit harsh just to have a plain ginger bias, wouldn't it? I quite like Williams and Blackman's, like blonde sort of
what
streak, right?
I totally disagree.
It does bits, but no, I've not too much hatred towards any particular hair.
Dave, you're a keen observer of hairstyles.
Am I?
A hair connoisseur.
I only tend to observe particularly poor hairstyles.
This is a poor hairstyle. No one sticking out?
No, nobody really. Not since Danny Guthrie left.
Oh, that mohawk.
Oh, man.
Oh, dear.
And on that note.
Yeah. I'm sorry we can't answer your questions. Keith, put forward some nominees for next week's show and we'll vote on the ones you put forward. Or listeners.
Who has had the worst hair in every Reading team you go with?
Yeah. Of all time. Hair of all time.
Jimmy Quinn.
Well, that's pretty bad. Andy Burnell.
Interesting.
Fairly dodgy hair. Tweet in.
Sonko's ginger dreadlocks.
Oh, yeah. That was bad.
And there it is.
yeah, could do. Anyway, at the Tire Lesson for that one, guys. Andy Walker. Only saw Pearson play for a few minutes on Friday, but how well is his short passing style going to fit in? Like I said, we didn't get to see too much of him, but anything from his few minutes on the pitch stand out?
Depends exactly where he's played and who he plays with. If you're playing with Saar, Vidra and Blackman, then it's going to fit in absolutely supremely. Given the way that some of the moves were constructed on Friday, even without him in the side, he'd fit in. But he would have to have one, maybe two midfielders behind him, because he doesn't strike me. He strikes me as a sort of player that's going to be pushed forward and leave a lot of space behind. So you have to counteract that. But if you can do that, fine.
Yeah, a bit of a Sigurdsson type when Sigurdsson obviously had Tab and Howard sat cleaning up behind him. I think he by the reading
Howard.
Wow. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Hey, he was good in that second half of that season.
Superb.
Him and Tab were brilliant, yeah. If you go onto thetylersend.com, you can read what the Chelsea fans make of Pearson. And again, their comparisons do paint him in a Sigurdsson-esque mould. I think he will be good in those games. For me, I see him playing in those games when you've got a team like the MK Dons that come to the ground and just try and park the bus. Because those intricate passes and trying to get around and through, I think are going to work a bit better when he's got a bit more space. It could possibly drift into a bit more of a free roll. But it'd be interesting to see how that one pans out anyway. We'll certainly see him, I imagine, over the course of the season, because I don't think Jose's in the habit of loaning out people to not play Michael Hector. moving on to FM Saves. He says, do you think Steve Clarke should stick with Tish Bowden at centre midfield and continue to keep out Alex Fernandez? Touched on that a bit earlier, Steve.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah. Well, at the moment, I don't see why you would risk playing Alex Fernandez until you need to play him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd say keep Tish in until poor form or whatever and you need to bring someone else in.
And Mark, on that note, Dave McCormick says, how the hell are we going to keep all the players happy?
Well, that is the job on for Steve Clarke, isn't it? And I think he'll rotate quite a bit. Like, we're going to set up predominantly depending on who we're facing. We set up for the council against Ipswich. We'll probably do the same for Derby. And then as we go on against the season, we'll start playing the teams that are going to park the bus. And we'll have to find a different way of playing, because that has been the problem for us for a good while now.
Yeah. Andrew Ward, do you agree with Sir John Medeski's comments that this is the strongest squad in the Championship? It's too early to judge for me. We ran over this exercise in one of the pre-season, I think maybe the first episode of the season, we looked at other squads, and I think I pointed out Derby and Middlesbrough were two squads I thought might be stronger than Reading's, but judging by the business we've done on deadline day, Dave, do you think this is the strongest squad in the Championship?
No, I don't. I think it's up there. It's certainly in the top six strongest squads in the Championship. But no, I still think Derby. Derby have spent a lot of money, but they've spent a lot of money on quality. And I think they currently have have by far the strongest squad.
Yeah. Mark Sugar, final thing in the mailbag today. He says, thoughts on the new banners in the southeast corner. Nice to see fans' ideas supported and funding by the club. So as you notice this, Dave, I've got to admit, I didn't actually notice them because I think people stood in front of them by the time I actually got into the ground after I finished my pre-match pint.
I didn't notice them, but I knew they were coming.
Yeah.
I can actually give you the story as to how they actually came about. There was a small group of fans who were invited in by the club, of which I was one. To effectively sit around a table and talk about how they could improve the atmosphere. And this was one of the little things that came out. And there were three lads, three passionate Reading fans who sit in the East Stand, who follow England away as well, who picked up the point that there was actually very little within the stadium to actually say this is Reading Football Club. You know, there's no lettering in the seats that say that. All you've got is the great big website advert at the back of the Upper West and a small sign above the entrance to the players' tunnel. That's literally it. And the more of these things that come up, that get placed up, the better.
Yeah, can't fault that. You know, I like, you know, some people frown on things like the big shirt that gets passed around and people bringing flags and stuff. More the merrier. I said, the thing that gives you a bit more identity and a bit more relationship with the club. And I said, to what extent they were supported by the club, you know, any extent that's being supported by the club is a good thing. And especially to the fans as well that put in the effort and time to get these things organised. You know, that's what a football club's about. It's about community. It's about doing things for the whole fan base. So, yeah, massive credit to them. If you haven't seen them, you could go on, go and have a look on the Tarlhurst End Twitter. I've just literally, well, you won't know what time I'm saying this, but there is a retweet on our Twitter feed of these banners. There's one for Robin Friday and one for the gaffer, Steve Clark. So, just before we move on, then, just on the mailbag, I just thought I'd bring it up. Orlando Saar's song. Is it here to stay?
Looks like it, doesn't it?
Spandau Ballet? Fan? Steve? No? DJ Mega Party was really enjoying it.
Oh, good. Good for him.
He's back. Guys, if you missed it, DJ Mega Party is back with a vengeance.
A little bit toned down, though, it has to be
said. He has been, yes.
Although he's still got, got two lines wrong, didn't he? The two critical lines of the build-up speech.
Yeah, let's make some noise and back the boys. You have one job, sir. In fact, no, you've got two jobs. One is to read out the teams in an understandable and easy manner. The second one is to get that phrase right. You failed on both, but, you know, he's getting better. And that's all I ask of people, is that they get better. Because Lord knows if this podcast was judged on actual quality of end product, we wouldn't be going anywhere. So DJ Mega Party, just...
You speak for yourself.
Yeah, well, you're obviously improving, but I like to think
why
I'm...
Why you brought in the emergency loans.
It's true. A major boost of quality. Yeah, that Westie and that Williams. Just, yeah. Sorry, we've not ended the segment yet. But yeah, no. DJ Mega Party, just keep it down. That's all we ask. But that just about wraps up the mailbag. I said, if you've got any thoughts on Saar's song, Nick Blackman, he scores goals, or anything to do with the atmosphere, or anything in the world, just send us a tweet at the Tarlhurst End. Get on our facebook.com/Tarlhurst End. Email address is thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Now let's just wrap up this show now with a few bits of any other business, including a preview of two more Championship games.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Right, gents, it's all very well and good beating Ipswich 5-1. If we lose at home to Derby, dare I say it, a good bit of the hard work will be undone. They come to the Maleski Stadium with only one win this season, although it did come this past weekend. They beat Preston 2-1. A team, Dave, that, as you point out, we have a really good record against, especially at Pride Park, but up until last season anyway, that extended to the Maleski Stadium away. Obviously, they came here and absolutely wiped the floor with us last season in a 3-0, which could have been a lot more. But this year, so they come to us in pretty shoddy form. I said they've only won once in the Championship this season. And it's not been a great start for Paul Clement, brother of former Royal Loney, Neil.
Neil, yeah. No, four draws, one defeat. They're obviously tough to beat, a bit like us. Like I alluded to earlier, they've spent heavily. They spent £20 million in the summer. They've got the likes of Tom Ince, Andy Wyman, our very own Alex Pearce, who, instantly looking at this...
can't even be on the bench at the moment.
On the bench at the moment, which is interesting. I mean, they've got a lot of former Premier League players in there. Chris Baird, Stephen Warnock, Ryan Shotton was on the bench. I'd say Tom Ince, Andy Vyman. Regardless of what.
Yeah, Champions League winner Scott Carson on the bench as well.
And Darren Bent, yeah. Scott Carson, yeah. You know, to get a result against this lot will be incredibly difficult, but they have only ever beaten us twice in Reading.
Yeah.
They are a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Is this...
Him and Stephen Bywater.
Yes.
It was great when those two went together.
Well, they're so-so. Warnock did us a favour in the FA Cup game as well last year, getting himself sent off.
Getting himself sent off on his debut. Yeah,
absolutely. They've just got... Mark, you look through this team lineup we've got in front of us that played at Preston. And as Dave says, it's just full of quality. You look at Jason Shackle, who's one of the best defenders in the Championship, I thought, when Burnley went up. Cyrus Christie doing well. I think he scored... I think he played for...
Coventry.
Yeah. Doing well. It's a team chocked full of quality. And if you,
like Bradley Johnson's in there as well. Yeah. £6 million from Norwich.
Player of the year in the Championship last season.
Yeah. So, you know, on paper, taking it... Are Derby the favourites for this game?
The fact they've won the last game, I'd probably say yes, because this is the worst time to play them. You want to play them just as they have that first demoralising draw, I think it's against Charlton or something, on the first couple of weeks of the season. You don't want to play them now they've just about to hit the hit their stride, because Chris Martin scored two goals. He's a Premier League striker in technique and physicality. Their players, as we've just said, around them are excellent. If they hit their form, then they'll be a very, very difficult team to play. I'm not sure they will, because their manager is probably still a bit naive, being a new up-and-coming manager, not really managing the in the Championship before. So there's certainly a way around them, but I think they're arguably the favourites, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really glad Will... it sounds really harsh. I'm not glad Will Hughes is injured. You know, he's a great player. It's a fortunate piece of luck for Reading that Will Hughes is unavailable for this game, because he is just an outstanding player. And Steve, I thought Derby were the best team to come to the Medeski last year, and that's why I was just so amazed that they blew it in spectacular fashion last season. It looks like they've had that hangover. Obviously, they didn't win any of their first five games, but going up to Preston, which, excuse the cliche, never an easy place to go, and picking up a win is a bit ominous, I think, for Reading.
Well, yeah, but then we've also won two on the trot as well, so we've almost both had very similar bits of form where you're drawing, not doing well, you're not scoring, and then suddenly, bang, we've got two wins, they've got their first win, and then you're going, oh, a bit tasty really, isn't it? Ooh, two teams who are winning and scoring now, so maybe it could be, yeah, I'm not there on Tuesday unfortunately, but it could be a really tasty one, you think?
I'm not entirely sure just how the pattern of play went up at Preston though, but you look at some of the chances that Preston had, and you know, you've got to say that Derby were a little bit lucky to come away with all 3 points. But having said that, 2-0 up at half time, you give yourself a good solid base.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, one player in that team I've never been convinced about, Lee Grant in goal. I always think he's got an error in him.
Yeah, he's got a pretty poor record at the Medeski.
I swear, I might be completely wrong getting confused with any other dodgy keeper, but I swear his kicking's awful as well.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is. He's the chap, I'm sure he played in both the Sheffield Wednesday 6-0 and 5-0 games.
I was just thinking the 5-0, yeah, he did play in that.
So there you go, there's something to get at. Just before we come on to predictions then, chaps, would you be tempted to change the team? Any player you'd look to swap out?
No. Well, why would you? After that performance, why would you?
Maybe to keep it unpredictable for Derby. Their perspective. Maybe
a Williams or a McCleary or...
Williams back in for Tish Bowler would be a good shout.
Dave?
Why would you change it? Why would you change it? You just scored 5 at home.
Yeah. You can't change the attack after that, can you?
No.
Who would you drop?
No. I think unless somebody puts their hand up and literally says, I'm not on my best, I'm injured, I think you've got to keep it the same. Because I think that was one of the things that Nigel Adkins got so horribly wrong. I remember, I think we'd just won. Like, I think it possibly would have been our last 3-0 win. Was it against Rotherham? And then we went to Brentford and capitulated? Or was it?
Yeah, because he dropped Cox.
I can't remember after which game it was. But yeah, he changed a team that had literally just stuffed a team at home and went and changed it trying to be too clever. So, and I don't think Steve Clark's like that. I don't think he's going to try and be too clever. I think he'll stick with the same side and hopefully he'll do the business. But predictions-wise, gents, obviously, unfortunately, the regular Prediction League crew isn't here. So your results will not count towards the end of the season. But pride is on the line here.
I'll stand in for Johnny if you
want. No, you can negotiate that with him. Pride is on the line here then, gents. Predictions, Steve, I'll start with you.
2-2-all. I'll go for a 2-2-all.
Mark?
I was just thinking 2-2-all, actually. To be different, I'll say 2-1 to Reading.
2-1 to the ding.
We'll go 3-2 Reading.
3-2 Reading.
Goals,
goals
in this.
Goals, yeah. Goals. And I'm actually going to say there won't be that many goals. I'm going to go for a much more scrappier 1-0 Reading win. And that does officially count in the Prediction League. Moving on then, obviously it's a game after a game, so these are always harder to predict. But we travel to Bristol City, an away day that I'm sure a lot of Reading fans are looking forward to. Ashton Gate, always a good place to go. It's only got a fair bit of redevelopment as well since we were last there.
Yeah.
Is the old shed still there? Is that gone now?
No, that the wedlock stand has gone.
The seats with no backs.
Rest in peace. It was one of the best away ends in the country, in my opinion.
Yeah, carried sound really well. Seem to remember parties there after Khalifa Cisse.
Oh yes.
Scored during a pretty emphatic win.
So Brian Howard and Khalifa Cisse in one podcast.
Wow, yeah, you know.
All the legends deserving.
Hey, look, we had Elroy Cromier as an interview guest the other day, so all the big names here on the Tyler 10 podcast. But no, Bristol City, a team that obviously came back up. They were knocking on the door for the Championship a while, won the league in pretty convincing fashion last season, League One. Also won the old LDV Vans, also windscreens, whatever you want to call it these days, trophy at Wembley. So they're doing the double. They've not done so well though since coming back up. They've only picked up one win in six, and they got hammered 4-2 at Birmingham on Saturday. And really, Dave, looking through the team that played last time out, you look at Derby and say it's a team full of household names. Quite the opposite really for Bristol City, other than Frank Fielding, who again is, I swear, another goalkeeper that loves to play against Reading.
There's a Mr. B. Hamer on their bench there.
Yeah, he is the one and only Mr. Hammer. Hammer time.
Frankie Fielding, yeah, another keeper who has pretty poor memories of the Medeski. In that game.
Yeah, he
having come on for Stephen Bywater.
That's it. That's sick. We've done it. We've completed the circle.
Here we go, yeah. Having come on for Stephen Bywater, who went off after about 10 minutes. He got sent off 20 minutes later, and they had Robbie Savage going goal. Excellent. Who won the game 4-1.
But yeah, not a team full of household names, though.
No, not really. I was thinking that earlier, looking through that team. It's very...
it's very League One.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Wilbraham up front, is that really going to get you many goals? I mean, he might have done it last season, but really? Seriously? Genuinely, if we don't win at Bristol City, I'll be slightly disappointed based on what we've seen so far this season.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. I said a team this is the measuring stick for a team like Reading. If you want to get promoted, you've got to go away from home and certainly beat teams that are going to be in the bottom half, at the very, very least, not lose.
And let's not ignore the fact that they've just conceded 4 goals at Birmingham, a team who we, to all intents and purposes, outplayed.
Yeah.
Still having to lose, but still outplayed.
Very much so. Well, prediction-wise, and again, I said I won't bother talking about the team because we don't know how Tuesday is going to go, but prediction-wise, Steve, I'll start again with you.
Riding the crest of a positivity wave, I'm going for 3-0.
2.
Reading.
You might be a positive Bristol City fan.
Yeah, well, a secret.
Mark?
Undercover. It's a potential banana skin, in fact, so I'm going to go 1-0 to Reading.
Okay.
Just scrape it.
Dave?
A comfortable 2-0.
2-0. I see this one counts. I'm going to have my positive... Oh, God. But I can't do that then because I've put the absolute jinx on us if I go for a win.
Nah, Johnny will say 3-1 to Bristol. So.
I've got Johnny's predictions here in just a second. I'm going to go for a 2-1 Reading win just to put the absolute jinx on us for Prediction League purposes. I will say, first of all, that last week for the Ipswich game, Charles Watts did not enter a prediction. So we have a hearty round of boos here for him.
Boo!
Yeah, Charles Watts, he ignored my pleas for a prediction. Running scared, obviously. But no, Charles was obviously away on holiday, so there was no podcast extra. So apologies for that last week. Hopefully catch up with him before next weekend's game at Bristol City. But he didn't enter a prediction. I said 1-1. Johnny went for a 3-1. Reading win, and Westy went for a 3-0 win to Reading, so they pick up a point each. Johnny's now level at the top with me in the Prediction League, and Westy's got his first point of the season, so there is hope. But Westy, for this week, he's gone with, if I can actually find the scores, he's gone for a 2-1 Reading win against Derby, and then a 2-2 draw against Bristol City, whereas Mr. Johnny Williams, our chief gamble-aware correspondent himself, he has gone for... This is where the magic happens. We'll actually dig out his scores. Ooh. Oh, no. Just talk, please. He's gone for a 3-1 win to Reading in both games. The 3-1 bandit is back.
Oh, good.
That's what he had for the Ipswich game as well.
He does. He loves the 3-1. Yeah. Last season, it was his favourite score. So we'll see how those goes. So we'll keep you updated. But that wraps up the show, guys. So thank you very much for joining us on this Sunday afternoon. Thanks for giving up your time. Sorry I can't provide a roast dinner or anything like that. Or
we'll go back to our clubs now the emergency loan has ended.
It's just, you know, these are emergency loans. It's not going to be a regular thing or anything. No, in all seriousness, great to have you on. Hopefully we'll have all three of you back at some stage over the season. I don't know when the next show's going to be. Usually this is the point where I discuss on air with Johnny and Westy when we're going to record. But I imagine it will probably be next Monday, at a guess. So stay tuned for that. As I said, hopefully I'll record with Charles the Podcast Extra towards the end of the week, but stay tuned for the Twitter account for that. Again, big thank you to everyone who sent in feedback this week, and especially to those of you who have subscribed and downloaded the show. Very much appreciated. You can head over to thetarlesden.com for loads more content and analysis, plenty of reaction to the Ipswich win, and we'll have lots of build up to the Derby game in the coming days. But that's it, gents. Thanks very much for joining us, and in the meantime, come on, you Ars.
End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.